It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 664 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you're ready for another fun crowdfunding doubleheader episode. This week it all begins with Mark Maya from So-Called Living, then everything concludes with the return of Jay Magnum from the excellent Astral franchise, both of which have Kickstarter projects ending soon. It all kicks off with my fun interview with Mark Maya, who discusses his Kickstarter for So-Called Living books 3-4. This series is described this way. So-Called Living is a dark comedy set in a world where the extraordinary is ordinary. Vampires, werewolves, and zombies live among us normies in a world much like our own, well, except for all the vampires, werewolves, and zombies, that is. We examine how the series came to be, who the various characters are, and what we can expect from Mark in the months ahead. Be sure to back this crowdfunder before it concludes October 31 at 9 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Then everything wraps up with the return of a favorite here at the podcast, Astral creator Jay Magnum. He has his current crowdfunding project underway on Kickstarter, and here's the description. It's the highly anticipated fourth adventure in the critically acclaimed Astral series. Action, sci-fi, and humor blend in this high-octane adventure about a disgraced ex-astronaut who must assemble a ragtag team of misfits, including one of the enemy, to stop a devastating attack on Earth by malevolent extraterrestrials called Astrals. Jay gives us the latest news in this franchise's development, who the characters are, and what else he and his team have coming our way soon. Be sure to back this crowdfunder before it concludes on Monday, November 4, at 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they both have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show.
Jack is back, baby.
So-Called Living is a dark comedy set in a world where the extraordinary is ordinary. Vampires, werewolves, and zombies live among us normies in a world much like our own, well, except for all the vampires, werewolves, and zombies, that is. Jack's story is very much an out-of-the-frying-pan, into-the-fire situation. In this case, the fire is comprised of some very bad men who are looking to do some very bad things. And they got their eye on one baby vampire in particular, and Jackie-O is his name-o. And I'm talking with creator Mark Maya. And how you doing, Mark?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to talk with you. So first thing we got to do, people get mad at me because I don't do this soon enough. I get involved in the story and I don't talk about this. This project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, October 31st, Halloween, appropriately enough, at 9 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And the good news is that you've already reached your goal as we're talking, so congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it was pretty good. We reached our goal in under 6 hours.
Wow. Boy, yeah. That's good. So that's a great thing. Now, as we're talking, of course, we record this ahead of time, is you've got more than 50 backers, and it's your original goal. Now, of course, is this Canadian dollars you're doing it in?
Yeah, it's Canadian dollars. So
that's why it says funny American dollar numbers on it. It's $1,468. I don't know who in the world sets that as a goal. So it must be yours is about $1,500 or $1,500.
It's $2,000 was our goal. That's how much of a difference. Yeah, that's how bad our Canadian dollar is. So any American listeners, this is the time to score some great, get some great deals on Canadian comic books.
Wow. Well, you're over $2,500 as we're talking, and you've still got, at this point, about more than 20 days to go, so there's still good things that can happen about this. Yeah. So let's talk about that. And of course, you have a wonderful paragraph in there about the why. The guy talking about creating comic books is expensive, especially as a writer. Well, lucky for me, I've got you guys, you see, on here. Talk about that a little bit, about using crowdfunding and stuff like that to make this comic happen. How does that work for you?
It's the Kickstarter has been great, and everybody on Kickstarter has been awesome. And what I said there is very accurate, especially if you're a writer. Because if you're a writer looking to get into comics and you don't have an artist friend who's willing to just like do work with promise of pay in the future, then you're going to be shelling out quite a bit of money for an artist. It's easier for an artist who doesn't write to get into comics than it is for a writer who doesn't draw.
Yep.
So it's been pricey as a writer getting in here, and Kickstarter has helped pick up the brunt of mostly the printing cost, actually, because as a newbie coming into the comic book world, my first comic book was So-Called Living Books 1 and 2, and that launched earlier this year. So, and now I'm doing books 3 and 4 in October, and then I won't do any more until next year. But it was coming in as an unknown entity with characters that are unknown, with a story that nobody knows. It's scary, and it's hard to raise money for something that nobody knows. And I get it, right? It's hard to part with your hard-earned money and give it to somebody that you don't know. They don't have a track record yet, right? So I'm brand new. I'm just like Jack. I'm a brand new baby vampire. I'm a brand new baby writer, right?
Right.
But, at least for comic books. Mm-hmm. I actually have written for video games.
Yeah, I was looking at your About the Creator on the website, and you're a BAFTA winner.
Yeah, yeah.
With a passion for all things gaming on your YouTube channel, Board Game Coffee. He dives into the world of board games. Now he's trying his hand at a comic book called So-Called Living. While he leaves the drawing to others, the storytelling is unmistakably his. It's Mark's next big adventure, and it promises to be exciting. I do enjoy your sense of humor. You make me laugh about those kinds
Thank
of things.
Thank you.
Very good. So where did the idea come from? Where did So-Called Living come from?
One thing you should know is that I wrote So-Called Living over 12 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And it was, my life was completely different then. But when I wrote it, I thought I wanted to write a novel. And I do. But I was like, it's going to take a while before I figure out if this writing gig is for me. So I thought I would do comics. I'll try comics. It's faster, right? It's a quicker medium. So I started writing this script, and I wanted to write a story where anything could happen. I wanted to make up my own world where these monsters, vampires and werewolves and everybody kind of exist. And I want them to exist with us, not in secret. Cause I think at the time, I don't know if I was watching True Blood or anything like that, but in all those cases, even when the world knows of vampires and werewolves, everything's always in secret. And I was like, what if it's not a secret? What if being a werewolf is just like being a plumber? You know what I mean? It's not a job necessarily, but it's like, it's known, it's commonplace, right? So that's what I wanted to do. And I wanted the world to be like ours. I didn't want it to be a dystopian future. I just wanted it to be like us, but I wanted, like right now, you could be a vampire, I could be a werewolf, and we know this, and we're just talking to each other. We're having this podcast, and that's okay, because you only record at night because you can't go out during the day. Like, it makes sense. So I wanted to do that. So I created a bunch of characters, and I created the first four characters for the book one, Jack, Jill, Casper and Nick, and I wrote bios for them, and I set up a scenario with some key points, and then basically I just set these characters loose in this sandbox of the mind, right? I know it sounds kind of artsy fartsy, but the characters really did take a life took on a life of their own, and I see them as separate entities from me, even though they're all like they are born from me, right? But right. I basically set them on a trail, and then I'll just write up and see what happens. Like, in my brain, I'm playing through it. Like, okay, Jack says this, but then how does his girlfriend, who's this personality, react? How does he respond? Then he comes across these big tough guys. How are they going to respond? Well, maybe she's probably going to be the in your face, like, get out of my way. Kind of like I've been in the situation. The girl that you take to the club that's going to start with a fight with a guy that's so much bigger than you, and you're the one that's going to get in trouble. That's pretty much how their first interaction goes with vampires. And that's how I came up with the story. Is I basically set up a world, set up the character backgrounds, and I spent more time on those. And I actually did this storyline where I just hit major beats that I know I'm going to hit. Like Jack gets turned to a vampire, and then next step, and the next step, and the next. Like, I know the main beats, but the steps to those beats, I don't know. Like, I have rough directions. I know I'm going to make a left up ahead, but I don't know everything from here to there. So until I stick the characters in there, and I'm basically like, I feel like I'm observing my own creation and I'm just taking notes.
Well, that's the way real creators do things. I mean, figments of your imagination are no longer figments of your imagination. They take a life of their own. And that's always fun. If you want to get a chance to see some of the pages, go to the Kickstarter page, and there are a couple of it's called Just a Taste. It's so-called Living Books 3 and 4. I guess you could go back and look at 1 and 2 if you wanted. There is a funny, funny bit going on with Mr. DeLuca and his underling Rico going on. And I just laughed. Rico is so used to saying ending every sentence with Mr. DeLuca. Because at one point he goes, "No, Mr. DeLuca. I mean, yes, Mr. DeLuca. Of course you do." He says, "Who am I, Rico? You're Mr. DeLuca, Mr. DeLuca." Okay, that killed me. I have to say I didn't have to read on. I had to stop for a second so I could collect myself and go back again and read that. "You're the boss, the man in charge, the most feared man in the city." So God, it was so funny. It was great stuff. And the interesting thing is these are not the main four characters. And so even these are quite funny. So the other ones they have their own interesting, fun things to do as well. So I highly encourage you to go and check it out because, gosh, now if I remember correctly, you have a website. And on your website, isn't the first issue available for free to download?
Yeah, actually, if you go to even on the Kickstarter page at the bottom of those three pages, there's a link that takes you to Global Comics, and anybody who wants to can read book one for free. Mm-hmm. And book two can also be purchased digitally from Global Comics. Currently, that's the only other way to get book two digitally.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Now, the two guys that are the vampires that Jack encounters, they killed me. Nick and Casper, I think their names are.
Yeah, Nick and Casper.
Oh my gosh, they. And of course, Jack's reaction to finding out that he's now a so-called living individual, he's actually dead, just killed me. Oh gosh, that was. The thing that gets me is I thought vampires had run their course. You know, Twilight. I thought everybody's going to expect good-looking vampires. You know, like X-Men. You know, every time you're some sort of a strange, wonderful creature. You're beautiful and handsome and stuff like that. And so I thought, oh, man, nobody's going to be able to do anything with vampires. But stuff like yours just keeps killing me and makes me say there is still life in those vampires and so-called life. And, gosh, just it made me laugh out loud several times. I get a huge kick out of I don't want to spoil stuff. How much of the first issue can we spoil? I mean, is there?
I think the first issue is fair game. Because we're on issue 4, and anybody can go read issue 1 themselves. And issue 1 is like an intro to Jack, right? And to the situation. Right. So, every time I talk about it, I always say, Jack gets turned into a vampire. And that's the that's the main event of issue 1.
Yeah. Well, that's not the only event, though, of issue 1.
No, it's not the only
event. Let's just say that Jack survives the attack better than his girlfriend does.
That's putting it lightly.
I don't want to spoil too much on that, but let's just say that he is around. His reaction to it all, though, just – I don't know if I'd be that calm. His reaction, I just got a huge laugh out of it because, he's like, "What? No, it can't be. No, not me," kind of stuff. And I found that hilarious. I mean, I'd be running around screaming, but he's "No, not me. Not that can't be me." But the two vampire guys, which one is the big dark-haired guy? Is that Nick?
Well, Nick, they're both big. And Casper's wearing the red hoodie. Okay. And Nick has the trucker hat on.
Yeah, yeah. He's the one, I think. He's the one that does the biting, if I understand.
Yeah, so that's correct.
Do you have in this thing about the – and I haven't read – I didn't get a chance to read too, but is he like the – in some vampire lore, they're the sire and they have a relationship of some sort or a connection with whoever they turn into vampire. Is that true in this
business? Well, that's one of the things that I didn't want to stick too much to. Most rules I do, vampires. But this the sire one is I wanted the characters to be free from each other and be able to have, like, I wanted Jack to be able to have like some sort of animosity toward these vampires, right? So I feel like if vampires kept getting sired and they're very loyal, then it brings up a different vibe than what I was trying to get across, right? So, but there is a bit of brotherly loyalty in a way, you know, kind of like you're loyal to your friend who's a jackass. So there's a bit of that going on. You can see that between Nick and Casper. Because they share blood, but they've got like a buddy, like a loyalty buddy bond. But yeah, as far as like Jack having to say everything or do everything that Nick says, that, yeah, that's not something that I've stuck to in this, but it is something that, you know, if I've always thought in the back of my head is like, maybe I could pull that out as like a part of Nick's tricks that Jack doesn't even know he could do. Right. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't know if that'll cheapen it. Like, I would only do that if the time is right. Cause I feel like if you brought out that power at the wrong time, it would cheapen the whole relationship. Like, then people would be like, why didn't you do that the whole time? If that was the issue. Right.
Right.
So I wanted to keep them kind of separate because I wanted them to be always a possibility where they don't get along or they do get along or they're friends or they're enemies or they do this. But if there's that constant siring, then you kind of lose the possibility of that story. Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a paragraph on the page on the Kickstarter page that I really enjoyed that you talk about. It says, the characters in so-called living are just fantastic. I love writing for them. They've got unique personalities, just mesh so well together, kind of like the cast of Friends. Their banter and interactions are hilarious and genuinely heartfelt. Then on the other side of that, you've got these serious bad guys lurking in the shadows, adding a Sopranos-like intensity. It's such a fun mashup. And I have to say, it's enjoyable to read. I have to say, I go into vampires expecting something, and this was nothing like what I expected, which I enjoy. And oh, I do want to mention too, you guys, you got a Project We Love Kickstarter in there, so that's congratulations on that too.
Thank you.
And now, I did mention to you before we started to record about the fact that this is your second Kickstarter, and you seem to do things in twos. The first one was books 1 and 2, and this is books 3 and 4. Now, as I read the page, you've got a possibility of 8 or so issues involved with this. Do you plan on doing them in pairs like this, or well, I guess the first one was successful, so you're doing that again. So is that kind of the pattern going forward, you think?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna do – because the reason I didn't do just one book is I didn't want to drag on the project for too long. So, and the script is written, so I'm not rushing to get it done on my end. And Marco, the artist, he's available. So, and I didn't want to drag this out for too long. And I also didn't want to run 8 separate Kickstarters, right? That seems like a lot of work. Mm-hmm. So, and the constant promotion. So I thought if I want to release four books a year, then I think 2 Kickstarters, I'll just do Kickstarters and that'll work out. So that means by the end of next year, I'll be able to have 8 issues out, which if I did separate Kickstarters for each, I don't know if I could do that because I'd be running them back to back to back. I think I'd kind of, that's like, that's a unique Kickstarter page for each, right? That's right. More combo packages to get caught up on what was there before. There's so much more stuff for every Kickstarter you do. So I basically cut my work in half by putting 2 of them on one. And it also makes shipping for people a little better, right? And actually, as far as shipping goes, I've tried to keep the shipping as low as I could possibly do because it's like $12 Canadian to ship anywhere in the States. And I know I recently backed a single comic book from the States and it cost $28 to ship here.
Right, right.
So yeah. We've got a pretty good deal because you can get all 6 books and still cost you $12 if you're anywhere in the States, $10 if you're anywhere in Canada.
Now, you said something that caught my attention. Is that the scripts are already written for all the 8 issues?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So that's see, I so often run into these things on Kickstarter where people say, I got this great idea. Give me money and I'll try to make a comic out of it. And I'm like, no. That's not what Kickstarter is for. I knew a family that did a Kickstarter, and they were turning novels they had written into comics. And what they did was they had real-life problems, and they ended up using the money to take care of those real-life problems. And I was kind of like, I hope they don't do any more Kickstarters, because I'm not going to be back in that anymore. Now, as much as I'm happy to help them, I would have liked to have known that's what the money was going to go for instead of doing the other way. So I'm always nervous when it comes to crowdfunding. So I hear people are working ahead of the game. I love that. I think that gives me confidence in what's going on. So I'm so happy to hear that.
Well, I definitely want to try to build it, because being new to the industry, I definitely want to build a reputation of being the guy who you can trust, count on, right? So I've never screwed Marco over on any payments for his art. Like, Marco's gotten paid for everything he's done. All the guest artists who have done covers have gotten paid for all their covers. Everybody's made more money on this book than I have, which goes along with the first line: making a comic book is expensive.
Yeah, well, welcome to the world of comics. That's all I can tell you. This, so what? So the money's going for shipping and printing. Is that what the money goes for?
The shipping. Well, no, everybody pays for shipping when they back. Mm-hmm. The money is mostly to cover printing, and I'm hoping after sales to cover pay myself back for the money I paid for Marco. Because like without Kickstarter, I couldn't get that. Without Kickstarter, I might've been able to get issue one or two done, but, I couldn't dig that hole deeper to get issue three and four done and five and six. So with Kickstarter, I'm able to make this happen, which is great. And again, even Kickstarter doesn't cover the cost of everything. It helps me get over the next hump for the next book.
Right.
So, because really if I was thinking legitimately how much money that I'd like to get from Kickstarter, it would be at least like 8,000. That would be ideal. Mm-hmm. Cause that would put me in a good place. But right now, like cause Canadian wise, it's like 3,300 or something like that. I haven't checked. That's how it is in Canadian dollars. Mm-hmm. So that's a good place for me to be. If it was eight, yeah, I'd be better, but I want to build a reputation where you can trust me. If I put up a Kickstarter and it funds, you're getting your books. Like I've already signed contract with the printers. It's as soon as it funded, I talked to printers. So I'll be sending them files as early as next week. It was supposed to be this week, but I had a little back accident. I ended up in the hospital for a little bit. Yikes. So that slowed me down.
Yikes.
And, So that's it. I just want to give people what they want. I'm so appreciative of people supporting me. Like you said, it's risky backing things on Kickstarter, and it's even riskier giving your money to somebody that you don't know and they're an unknown entity. So it's, I really appreciate it. Like, I can't put into words how much I appreciate the support I'm getting from backers. And it really means a lot. And I hope they're getting a good story, like a story they enjoy, because I really enjoy it. And from what I've heard you say, you enjoy it, which is great. And that's the feedback I've gotten so far. So I'm really happy with that.
Well, I'm always intrigued when something defies my expectations. Because, you know, like I said, vampire stories to me, I've always been like, well, okay, vampire stories. We've read it all. But when I started to read yours, and of course, Jack, I feel sorry for Jack already. I just, you know, he's a great character because, you know, I feel for him. And I've only read one issue. And so, all the characters I feel some sort of affinity for. I mean, you know, even the crazy vampires make me laugh and stuff like that. They do some unusual and wonderful things. And a great comic book pulls me out of the real world and draws me into the comics world for a while. And I forget where I am and what I'm doing. And I'm just in the book. And that's what your book does for me. It throws me into this so-called living world. And I really like it.
Oh, I'm glad. I hope you got all the reviewer copies, because I hope you enjoy reading those. Because I think book three was in the reviewer package. It's got no cover in that. It's got a cover now, but when I put that package together, it's got no cover. Some of the lettering has been adjusted since, but the reading should be fine.
Mm-hmm. So it's funny. It's a really great book in all levels. I mean, you know, lettering is always the best when you don't notice it. It's when you notice it that you know it's bad. And but the lettering, I think, and the coloring and everything is just really works well. Now, of course, I got to ask, how did you find your artist? Was it online or how did you do it?
Yeah, I'll do a short form of this story, and if you want to expand on anything, you just let me know.
Okay.
So at first, I work with a lot of artists, so I thought, and a lot of my friends are artists, so I was like, I'll ask them, see if they want to partner up on a book. Some of them said yes, some of them said no. The ones that said yes eventually dropped out, because being an artist all day and then going home and drawing a comic book is a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
So they dropped out. I had no qualms with them. Actually, I had lunch with one of them just the other day. And we're talking about potentially working on another project in the future. Mm-hmm. But, and he supports SoCal Living, and he was supposed to be the artist for SoCal Living. So, but he's back to Kickstarter. So I appreciate, like, there's no hardships. we're still good friends.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, when that fell through, I put the book away for a long time and I picked it up again. And, I decided I'm just going to straight out find somebody to pay to do the books. It's going to be like an employer-employee relationship. Because the partner route wasn't working for me. So I went online asking, does anybody want to do this? No, I didn't get many responses, but somebody did suggest go to Twitter. So I asked the same question. Does anybody want to do this? And the amount of responses that came back was ridiculous, because I don't have a huge Twitter account. I'm not even a Twitter person. I know it's called X now, but when I put this post back, it was Twitter still. Like, I was never big into Twitter. I just have an account because everybody had an account. So I thought, what the hell? Put it out there. And the amount of responses I got and how quick I got them was ridiculous. I never expected that. I thought I'd get like five people. But I stopped looking at portfolios after like, I don't know, like 40 people. Like, it was ridiculous how fast they came in. And it was all the same. That was in within 2 hours, 3 hours. It was like crazy all day. They just kept pouring in. So I was like, wow, whatever hashtag I used, I nailed it. Mm-hmm. But I went through portfolio after portfolio. And like I said, I stopped after around 40. But up to then, the like 95% of what I saw was all anime art. And it was all like that teen romance anime, you know, all the body types are the same, the very skinny guys with the pointy chins, the big eyes, the kind of square jaws. Like, everybody looks the same. They have the spiky hair. And all these artists, all the art styles, they looked the same back to back to back. I was like, this is the same art, just different quality. Some are better than others. And I was like, I saw some really good anime art, but I was like, that's not SoCal Living. That's not what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And I was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. If I'm going to pay somebody, I'm going to pay somebody who can give me exactly what I was looking for. And I was looking for somebody that could draw like, or similar to Humberto Ramos.
Mm.
So I went to a Facebook page and I found somebody there. Wrote a story about how they paid an artist. The artist took their money, drew some pages, and then took off and then just ghosted them. And he was like, can anybody draw like this to save me so I can finish my book? Cause I got ripped off by an artist who took my money and ran. And then somebody came on there, David Campetti. And he was like, oh, I have a studio with a bunch of artists. I can probably hook you up with somebody that works. So I contacted him directly and I was like, hey, so I heard you have a studio. And he's like, yeah. So I talked to him. We went back and forth. He said, come up with a budget. I was like, I don't even know how to budget this. So I was like, okay, here's a number. And he was like, well, I don't have anybody in my portfolio that could do that for that much. But I have somebody in Italy who runs a studio just like I do in North America. So I was like, all right. So I got introduced to his guy in Italy, and he introduced me to Marco. Hmm. And Marco works for one of these studios that basically does work for, you know, they'll do work for Disney or do work for Mattel or Marvel or whatever. And actually own some board games that Marco's done some artwork for. So that's how the cycle. I did start online, but I ended up with a studio who manages artists, which is a better way to go, because I was able to avoid all the issues of like, I paid this guy all my money and he took off. Mm-hmm. Or the vice versa. Mm-hmm. You know, you have an artist who does all this work and then doesn't get paid.
Right.
Like, there's there's problems on both ends of that deal. But if you find a respectable studio, then they got your back. They'll make sure. And if somehow the artist takes off, like, because they're on their payroll, if the artist takes off, they either don't get paid or they'll make it up for you. They're like, we're going to get you a different artist. We'll fix this. So we'll make it right.
I like what you're saying because, you know, this, I'm a firm believer in connections. Because my roommate and I, he put together an indie comic and we were at cons. And what we would always do is we would end up being on a table next to somebody. And invariably it would work out that we would do something together. And, you know, I could mention some names and stuff like that, but it would all happen because we were next to each other and we made a connection and we talked to each other because cons going on and stuff. But see, this way you did it. See, I've never heard anybody go through X and actually get the connection that worked for you. I've always heard Facebook.
Well, yeah, X didn't work for me. The X was all the anime. It was Facebook where I met David Campetti.
Right. So that's I would stick with Facebook if it was me too, because that's where most of my connections are there. I mean, I have connections every part of my life. My high school friends are there, people I worked with, different, they're all on Facebook and stuff like that. So, and maybe because I'm older, but the X and stuff like that, I people tell me how great X is, and I'm on there, but the moment I post something, in about 2 minutes, it's gone. And so I'm kind of like, I don't know if I really want to use X and stuff. So I'll keep that in mind when X comes around again. People tell me how great X is, I'll say, wait a second. maybe not. But before I let you go, I've got to talk about, and if there's any young children, we need them to turn the podcast off right now. Because before I get to that, though, I got to ask about the bunnies. Talk about the bunnies, because the book that my roommate and I did was called Stabbity Bunny, and it was all about a plush rabbit. And so ever since then, every time I see bunnies, my attention leaps up. And so you've got bunnies in this book. Talk about the bunnies before we get on to the other stuff.
Sure. Yeah. Well, in the first book that you read, you would have noticed that right off the hop, there's a little mention of bunnies, but it's a background story. It's not the main characters don't even address it. It's just something that happens on TV, and it's followed by, like, the first thing that happens is, like, there's a zombie outbreak, but they don't care about it because there's a zombie team that cleans that up. It's common. It's a commonplace event that happens in this world. But then on the news, the next thing on the news is, like, this big bunny crisis that the world councils are getting together to discuss. And then the TV gets turned off before the story goes any further. So I plant the seed that there's this bunny issue that's happening in the background. So Jack's story of him and then the mob is going to get involved in that. And that story is going to eventually meet up with the whole bunny situation. And every issue, you'll hear a little bit more and a little bit more of the bunny situation. And it'll be on news. It'll be in the background. It'll be in the foreground and some in a panel or two as far as, like, it'll be right in your face in some cases, but then gone. And we want you to understand, I want you to understand that the people in the world are well aware of what the bunny situation is, but the reader isn't. And I want the reader to kind of have that mystery, like, what's with the bunnies? And I want them to read and learn and hear more about them and figure it out by how people react to the bunnies. Because right now in Jack's story, the bunnies are a situation that's happening somewhere else. In most cases, that's what it feels like to him, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like when you heard about the flooding in Dubai. It was like, that's terrible for Dubai, but we're not living in Dubai. That's not my problem. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you look at it. So you're not connected to the event because the event's not happening to you. And currently it's not happening to Jack. But when it does, then it starts getting a little more real for Jack and our reader, because our reader sees everything through, like, Jack's eyes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there is this underlying story. And what I like is that in a world full of monsters, the biggest concern that people have are these bunnies. And one thing that you should know, up until now, what people have seen, nobody's ever seen the bunnies do anything, but you have seen people react to the bunnies. So if this went to court, the judge would be like, did you see the bunny do anything? People would be like, no, but I know they did. Because, you know, they were there and then they weren't, and then there was chaos in their place. And But yeah, it wouldn't hold up. But people in our story knows where it is. So there's this whole underlining bunny story that I'm not going to go too much in detail because I want the reader to kind of like experience it as they go. And I don't want to like tip my hat or give away too much just yet. Because the main story is still Jack, but the bunnies will play a major part in it.
What got my attention was the cover of issue 4 has a whole bunch of bunnies on it.
I drew that cover.
Oh, did you? Oh, wow.
I did. Yeah.
That's pretty good. But there's another thing that got me was there is a blood bunny keychain.
Oh, yeah. That's
right. For $8. And it says on the back, official member of the blood bunny colony.
That's right. So, and that's $8 Canadian. So that's probably like $5 American. And at the very least, you're going to get an awesome keychain that we make ourselves in house. It's black and white acrylic. And I put that, I recreated artwork that my friend Jamie did. I had to recreate it because I had a low-res version. Recreated an Illustrator, gave it to my wife. She has a laser cutting machine. And she cuts it out of white and black acrylic. So when the laser cuts in, the black comes through. And it looks really good. And on the back, we carve what you said, official member of the Blood Bunny Colony. So other than just a keychain, what happens is when you buy the keychain, you're automatically added to the Blood Bunny Colony as a member. You're automatically a member of the Blood Bunny Colony when you buy the keychain. So your email goes in a list that we're keeping. And for once you buy the keychain, once you become a member, every so-called living Kickstarter from now on, you'll get a benefit, a bonus of some sort, like membership has its perks type of mentality. Mm-hmm. So people who bought the keychain during the first Kickstarter, this time around, they're getting the option of if they got the standard, because I have three tiers, three different art tiers. I have standard covers drawn by Marco, elite guest covers, and the sex pot editions, which are just kind of like fun, sexy covers for people who like sexy covers. But basically, if you buy the standard, if you're a member of the Blood Bunny Colony and you buy the standard tier, you can get upgraded for free to the elite tier. And if you get the elite tier, you can get upgraded for free to the sex bot tier, because each of those tiers cost $5 more than the one previous because they're a limited run. They're special guest artists. And once they're gone, they're gone. But if you don't want the upgrade, you'll also get the option of getting a free print and sticker set. And that's only available to members of the Blood Bunny Colony. So if anybody who buys the keychain this time around will get a benefit on the next Kickstarter and then on the next Kickstarter.
Okay. Blood Bunny. I'm gonna posit a possibility. Are the bunnies vampires?
Well, the Blood Bunny Colony, the bunnies have not been confirmed as vampires. They're not called Blood Bunnies in the comic, but I needed a name for this bunny colony that was more than just bunny colony. And I figured to go with a story that's very vampire centric, the bunnies do have, terrifying side to them. So that's why I called it the Blood Bunny Colony. Okay. But I am not going to confirm or deny if the bunnies are vampires.
Okay. Well, you have to buy the book to find that out, whether that's true or not. Okay. Let's get to the, you touched on it briefly already, the sex pot edition.
Yeah.
Okay. I have to know, because these things always intrigue me, how well do these sex pot edition covers sell?
So the reason I made the sex pot edition was because I did a lot of research into Kickstarter of like what sells, and you're either a big IP, you're a well-known artist, or you have sexy comics.
Absolutely.
Now, there's nothing sexy about So-Called Living. No. It's a great comic, but there's nothing sexy about it. There's no nudity. There's no sexy characters inside the book. So I thought, well, let's have fun with it. And this was with my wife's idea originally. She's like, well, why don't you make a sexy cover? And I thought, well, but there's nothing sexy about my book. And if I do it, I wanted something to tie in. So then it occurred to me, I created the badge called Obligatory Sex Pot Edition. And that basically is like, we're just being outright with it, being like, if you want to be successful on Kickstarter, you have to have a sexy cover, right? Oh, like yeah. That's the, oh, yeah. It's kind of like the, that's the, it's the joke, not the joke. You know what I mean? It's so I put that badge on it. And then in the first two books, the characters that were on the cover, the girls were basically, overly sexualized versions of the girls that were in the comic. Kind of like when you go to, a comic con and you see a sexy version of Mario and Luigi. Right? Like you see so it's, think of it as like a cosplay edition of characters that were in there. So they were in the same costume, but they're totally boobified. And then in on the second one, there's a zombie cover, and it's based on one panel that's in book three that shows a pool that's just filled with zombies, and they're just standing in the pool. That's a panel in book three. And so I thought, well, what if we put that pool on the cover, but we have like a sexy zombie girl coming out. So that's a play on that panel. And the next one was for book four, because if you look at book four standard edition, it's a bunch of guys in a bar brawl, and it's just bodies on bodies, and they're just scrapping it out. Mm-hmm. And it's all guys except for one girl on that cover. That's one of the characters that gets introduced in that book. So I thought, for the sex pot edition, what if I made it like all the girls in the bar got into a fight? So I made a version where all these girls, and there's no nudity on these covers. Mm-hmm. So, but they're all like sexy women ripping each other's shirt off or revealing lingerie. They're pulling at each other's hair, punching each other in the face. So it's like a big fight of all girls, because we have a big fight of all guys on the standard cover. So I thought that would be a fun little thing. So I don't ever want it to be just random. I don't want to like have a picture of a stripper on my book. Like I have nothing against anybody who buys sexy books. I like sexy things, but it's not for so-called living unless it's presented like this.
Mm-hmm. See, I have to tell you, I told you the Stabity Bunny is the name of the book that I was reading. We had met an artist, and he wanted to go to dinner with the two of us because I'm the editor, and so I kind of give my input on stuff. We went to dinner, and he said, "You know, how old is Grace in the book?" Well, she's 8 years old. "Why don't you make her 16?" And I said, "Why would we do that?" Well, because at that point, she and the bunny can do things that we don't normally think of, things with bunnies. And luckily, the guy who's the creator, he just sat there with his mouth open. And we said, "You know what? That's never going to happen."
Well, ironically, like I said, I had a lot of artist friends. And one of... my artist friends, who's it's a girl, and she got a lot of, I worked with her professionally, and then she got a lot of requests to do furry art and very sexualized furry art. And it was funny because she did one piece, and it was just like I can't remember what it was, but it wasn't overly sexualized. It was like, you know, a buff furry creature. She just did it for the fans, and she put it out there. And all of a sudden, she just got inundated with these requests of like these very pornographic poses. And she was like, "That's all I draw now." And she's like, I was like, "Do you like it?" She's like, "They pay you really well." So I was like, "It's easy and I do it." She's like, "It's not really my thing," but she's like, "I don't really care." It's like, "Whatever floats your boat. If you're willing to pay me to draw it, I'll draw it." It was her person. Wow. That was her idea. But that's what you reminded me of with like the bunny and the girl. I was like, I get his thinking, because there is an audience for that.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
And they pay through the nose for stuff like that.
Literally. And so the thing, we haven't seen him in a long time. He's gone off to do other things because we weren't receptive to his ideas, I guess. But I remember sitting there looking at him going like, "What? You want to do what? I mean, she's an 8-year-old girl and you want to what?" And I was I was just like, yeah. And you know, the thing was, we talked afterwards, is yeah, I could probably sell on Kickstarter, no problem. But that's not what we wanted, thankfully. But it's funny, but I hear you, and I understand why you do those kinds of things, because there is a certain market for that, and you know, why not tap into it if it helps?
Though the sex pot editions by themselves didn't sell as well as the others, the all-ins sold just as like the first one almost just as much as the standard editions.
Really?
Yeah. So even this time around, the all-ins are selling more than the elites.
Wow.
Which tells me that people like all the covers.
Wow.
So that's great. So it's like, if you don't want all the covers, you'll get, if you don't care about the covers, you just buy the standard.
Right.
Which are great covers, mind you. But people who seem to like all the ones are buying the all-ins. So the all-ins are doing well. So to me, that's still a success on the Sex Pots, even though they didn't sell so many by themselves, because they contributed to the selling of the all-ins, where people get all six variant covers.
Yep. Yep. If it works, why not? You know, keeps the book going. All I can say is, you know, hey, you know, if you don't mind doing it, it's not something that, I guess I feel like that. That's just offended us mightily, but obviously this is something you don't mind. So, hey, what the heck?
Oh, it was funny. My wife told me a story. She was manning the booth while I stepped away for a bit. And a guy asked her about Sex Pot covers for issue 1 and 2. And she was like, yeah, they're like our cosplay covers. You know, the character, the girls in the book are kind of like plain Janie compared to these girls, but we thought we'd have fun with it. And he's like, okay. And he walks away, and she heard him later talking to somebody else. And they're like, see that girl over there? She's a pervert. And she was like, what? I'm a pervert. So that made me laugh. If you knew my wife, you'd know she's so, it's funny that she came up with the idea to do like a sexy cover, because she's so, she doesn't want to offend anybody. She tries to be very proper and tries to be very kind and very, so it's funny that the idea came from her.
Oh, you know what? If it sells and it keeps the book going, why not? All I can say, let it go.
I'm hoping the Sex Pots bring them in, but I'm hoping my writing keeps them there, right? And keeps them coming for the next one.
That's what they always say, that the art on the cover attracts the people, but the writing is what makes them come back for the next issue.
The art is the worm on the hook.
Yes. Yes, that's the way people always describe it to me. And I think that's the case. And, you know, hey, if it gets people to read the book, why not? That's all. Yeah, and let them do it.
Because I want to keep writing this. Like, this story is going to end after, like, 8 issues. I think I said 8-ish in the Kickstarter. That's because the last script I have is a little long. Mm-hmm. So it's either going to be a really big book, or I'll expand it into 2. But if I do that, then I'll have 3 books on the last Kickstarter, or one big one. I have to figure it out. I have to iron out the last script. Like, it's written, but I have to tighten it up a bit. Mm-hmm. So, but I have some time before I have to get to that. But the thing is, I lost my train of thought. That's the problem. I'd like to say that I'm also medicated. I went, I had an accident. I hurt my back. I was in the hospital yesterday, and they gave me painkillers, and I'm not used to taking like mind or body altering thing. Like, alcohol is my thing. That's it. I'll drink, but I'm not a drug guy. I don't even do pot, and it's legal here. But so they gave it to me, and I'm like loopy, man. I can't like hold a thought together.
I don't know. You've done pretty well as far as I can tell. So it's pretty good, but I probably should draw things to a close here. Once again, see, I never say this enough for some people. The project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, October 31st, which happens to be Halloween at 9 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And that's what we said, as we've talked, we've already met your goal and keep going. Stretch goals. Are you going to have stretch goals?
No, I don't have stretch goals, because I just want to be able to – I want people to know exactly what they're getting.
Okay.
And I'm still too new to Kickstarter to throw in stretch goals. So, like, I want to keep playing with these things. So, like, being my second one, I'm playing with combo packages. In the next one, I'm playing with the idea of, like, custom art, or maybe put a character in a book. Hmm. Like, if you pay enough, you can get, like, your character in a book. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to play with ideas like that. For future Kickstarters, but I'm taking it slow. I don't want to take on too like more than I can chew, off more than I can chew.
Well, I have to say, I'm all for the last one. There was a guy who did a zombie Moby Dick book, and he offered that you could be in the book, because he had a whole bunch of characters on the ship. And if you gave, you know, if you got a certain amount of money, which I could actually afford at that point, because usually they're like $500-$600 to get drawn into a book. And I said, this one was actually $80. And I was like, I can afford that. And so I got drawn into the book. The only bad thing was when I gave my picture, because I was on a zombie member on the ship. I didn't have my glasses on, so I didn't recognize myself. And I had to say to him, well, where am I? And he pointed out this panel this way. Oh, there I am. Oh boy. And I tell everybody I was drawn into a comic. Oh boy. I love that. So that's one of my best things. And I always think that's a big seller when it comes to Kickstarters and stuff like that. So I would encourage that in the future. I would say that's a good thing.
I mean, I'll do that for next year because I'm planning on running another one either in March or May.
Hmm. Okay. So that's good stuff. Well, all I can tell you, Mark, is that I enjoyed reading the book. I cannot wait for more. I'm dying to read stuff. Like I said, your sense of humor just slays me because it's not what I expect from a vampire book in any way. And I like to be surprised. So it's called So-Called Living Books 3 and 4. And go to Kickstarter, and one last time, it's going to be funded if it reaches its goal, which it already has, by Thursday, October 31st, which is Halloween, at 9 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So all I can say, Mark, is keep it up. Wonderful stuff. I'm dying. Again, I'm going to have to sign up and get so I can make sure I get the books moving forward because I don't want to miss because I can't wait to see what you've got in your mind coming up for this stuff. It looks like lots of fun.
Oh, the story definitely picks up. So I'm so happy that you like it, and I hope everybody else likes it. It means so much to me when I hear feedback like that. So thank you.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support this show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance.
What would happen if Earth was attacked by aliens called Astrals, but there were no superheroes to stop them? Well, that's what Astral is all about. But now it's time for vengeance. Astral Vengeance. Hey there, I'm Jay Magnum, creator, writer, producer of the Astral series.
What is Astral Vengeance? It's the highly anticipated fourth adventure in the critically acclaimed Astral series. Action, sci-fi, and humor blend in this high-octane adventure about a disgraced ex-astronaut who must assemble a ragtag team of misfits, including one of the enemy, to stop a devastating attack on Earth by malevolent extraterrestrials called Astrals. And it's always a pleasure to talk with the creative force behind Astrals, and that's Jay Magnum. How you doing, Jay?
I'm great, Wayne. Thanks for having me on the show. Love to be here. Been here a bunch of times, but never gets old, so thanks again for having me.
Always glad to talk with you, and let's get right to business, why don't we?
Sure.
You've got a Kickstarter going on right now. Why don't you tell people about it?
Okay, sure. So the Kickstarter is called Astral Vengeance, and it's for issues 1 through 4 of Astral Vengeance. Did one last year. In fact, just got done with the fulfillment on Vengeance 3, so all of those books are out right now. So it's the time is ripe to launch another installment in the Astral Vengeance adventure series. So, as you said, Astral Vengeance is the fourth adventure. So, a little context behind that. So, now we're rewinding many years, showing my age now. So, I think it was back in 2018 is when the first adventure came out, and that was graphic novel Astral Genesis. The following year, got another graphic novel out, the sequel to that one, which was called Astral Evolution. It's 2018 or 2019, I should say. And then in 2021, Astral Alliance came out. That was the third graphic novel. And ever since then, we've been working on the fourth one, which is Astral Vengeance. So I've been launching comic books for that one. I found it was easier kind of to do it that way. So Vengeance is the fourth adventure, and we're on the fourth comic book. So all fours.
All right. So let's see now. People get mad at me because I never say this soon enough. This project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Monday, November 4 at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And, of course, anybody who's had a look at your stuff before, it's very professional. I do a little video where I review books and stuff, and I reviewed one of your books and gotten the highest mark I've ever given anybody. So it's a really highly recommended book or series of books. So I have to really say good things about Astral. things. I love it. It's just really superly well done.
Yeah, thank you for that. You saved me the trouble of bringing that up. I was going to say, hey, Wayne, why don't you talk about that? No, yeah, I did see that. In fact, you know, just like any perfectionist, you know, as I am, you know, you look back at stuff like that, and you did mention it was the highest rating that you gave, and I think that was Astral Genesis, the first one that you reviewed.
Right.
And so being the perfectionist I am, I'm looking back on it and going, well, how come I didn't perfect the score completely? It was like all A's and one B. So you grade on like an A to F score or something like that, like in school, you know. Like it was like all A's and one B, and I had to go back and which one was the B. And I think the B was humor. So it's like, why didn't I get an A in humor? And it's like, but I think you were grading on the curve like humor books would get an A, and this is more like a sci-fi action adventure with humor. So it's not like a comedic, like comedy is not the full focus. And so, you know, I get that, you know, so that's funny. Yeah.
Sad to say is that there's such things as funny books, and there's a lot of humor involved and stuff like that. Well, Astral Vengeance, the Astral series does have humor involved with it. It's not a funny book in the purest sense of the word, so I kind of had to lower that just a smidge.
Right.
But it's still, you know, just one B. That's a lot of people would like to have that kind of reading.
Well, so. Not to get on you here, but I mean, since that's the case, I mean, is there any book that you can think of that could make straight A's? I mean, is it even possible on the grading scale, or is all A's and a B the highest you can go? I'm just, you know, because if it is, then you know, I'm really happy because Astral's winning.
I haven't seen any book the thing that usually gets graded down is lettering, because usually people, when they do stuff like that and they put word balloons and stuff, they invariably cover up part of the art, and that always drives me nuts. So usually lettering is the one that gets the lowest grades, but not in your book. Your book, everything is nicely done, and I could see everything the way I want to see it. And so as far, I'm trying to think if I actually, because, you know, the bad news is I'm not much of a fan of funny books in the purest sense of the word. I think the only one that might have is a little funnier is what's called High-Low. I reviewed that, and that was a lot funnier. That's a silly, funny book. It's about a boy who turns out to be a robot. And, oh my gosh, he must have done 10 of those books by now. I think is it Jay Farber? Let me read you over here and see the book. It is Judd Winnick. He's the guy who does those books.
Okay.
And I like them. I enjoy them. They're a lot. I mean, it's silly kid stuff, humor, things like that. But it's so that to me was a funny book, because this has a little bit of adventure here and there, but it is not a. Let's just say it's funnier than Astral Vengeance is. Why don't we just say?
Yeah, you wouldn't normally expect a story with vengeance in the name to be funny, but I think the one you had reviewed was Genesis, and so, you know, it's interesting you should mention that, because that's true, is that each of the four adventures that we're on so far, each of them has sort of a different tone to it. So I think Vengeance is kind of the darkest tone we've had in all of the adventures so far.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. The issues I've read so far have been really good and very, very engaging, and I can hardly put it down. And then, of course, I get to the end and I go, oh, that's not the end. Oh, not already. And so, how many issues are going to be in Vengeance?
Okay, so there's a total of five planned. So we got one more coming out, and that will cap off that particular adventure or, you know, narrative. And then you know, the inevitable question comes, well, do you have anything planned, you know, for in the future? And the answer, of course, is yes. So once Vengeance is done and all the books are out, we'll start looking at the next one. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
So how many maybe we should say adventures are you going to have? Is it four? Is this the end?
No, of course not. I mean, I'll do them as long as people are interested and people are reading them. I'll keep doing them. I mean, that's the thing about these characters in this universe is there's really no shortage of what you can do with them. So I've got plans, you know, in the future. You know, after Vengeance, we'll do another one. And then, you know, after that, I have outlines for future, you know, so the subsequent adventures I have in mind in a little bit more detail. And then the adventures subsequent to that, I just kind of have outlines. But I mean, we'll go as long as, you know, anybody wants to go. As long as people still buying the books like you and are happy with them, I'll keep on making them. So,
well, I'm happy to support it because I enjoy the books tremendously. I think they're great.
Cool.
I got to ask, I forgot to look it up. Is it Lila? Is her name or Lila?
Yes,
Lila.
Right.
Okay, so I did remember it right. So it's Lila. She's. Why don't you talk about Lila a little bit? Because that, you know, that you started. I think you were before the era of the female lead character really took hold. So you were ahead of the curve on that. So talk about Lila as a character, you know, and you know what the story has to do with her.
Okay. Well. So. You have to, again, a little context. So this series is a sci-fi action adventure. So it's set in the near future. So it's not in the far future, sort of in our near future. And the story is really about a bunch of more or less human characters. And again, this is why I say the stories are very relatable, I think, to people because, you know, we're all humans. We relate to other humans. And so the story itself, the storyline is focusing on a core collection or a core group of human characters. But then we have these astral characters. And what are the astral characters? Well, so the astrals, as you said earlier, are, you know, an evil conquering, you know, kind of, you can't say it's a race because the way I did it, astrals are sort of all different kinds of alien races, right? So the beings that are in charge of the astrals that direct the astrals and control them are called the architects, right? So we have these other aliens called the architects. And so what they've done over the millennia, you know, out in space is they've found worlds where, you know, these alien worlds have indigenous creatures and they've hybridized them with astral DNA. So it's this large, you know, conquering force of astrals controlled by the architects. And the astrals are made up of hybridized aliens of different races, so it's sort of a mixture. So when they get to Earth, one of the things they're trying to do is hybridize humans, right? So that's one of the first things they're trying to do. And so they have picked this particular female character, which ends up, you know, being Lila, and hybridized her. So she's a human hybrid astral, right? That's what she is. And so what they've done is they've manipulated her DNA in certain ways. So she has, you know, superhuman strength and intelligence. And I also have to mention, you know, the thing that everybody likes about Lila is that she has her left forearm it looks like metal when it's an arm configuration. Mm-hmm. Okay. And she can also configure it into a bioelectric cannon weapon. So that's pretty cool.
Wow. Okay. So where did she come from? I mean, as far as how you developed her, was she based on anybody or she's a creation of your imagination?
Well, now we're going to go down the rabbit hole a little bit. So I've been doing this for a while. you have these sorts of ideas rattling around in your head. So the fundamental idea for a character like Lila, I imagined, I remember first imagining about 30 years ago. So that's about how far back it goes. So that would be 1994, 1995, something like that. I imagined a character and, you know, we all have things we have to do. We have to, you know, buy a house, get a job, that kind of thing. So I kept on, you know, I've been sort of developing these elements and sort of maybe developing some of them separately. So I had an idea for the other characters, you know, D-Vane and Jeannie and Angelica and Rob. These are the other characters in the story. And at different times, I'm thinking about different characters and thinking, I think at one point I was thinking about doing different stories with each of the different characters. And then I decided maybe to combine them and just thinking about them over the decades. So it's just something that I've been developing in my head for a long time. And when I got to the year 2011, I decided, you know what, life's too short. And I had a little money. So it's like, well, let's maybe start to get serious about the development on some of this stuff. So it's interesting you should mention that, because I think, you know, this is just going back to the history of it. From what I can remember, at one point when I was formally developing this to be a story, and at that point I wasn't sure if it was going to be like a prose novel or a comic book or like animation. I wasn't even sure what format it was going to be. But I think at one point, Lila, I had developed her as like some type of futuristic civilization princess or something like that. And then at another point in time, I had Lila and Genie being the same character, and like Genie was the secret identity and Lila was the superhero. And I thought, well, that's not really working out. That's kind of cliched. Everyone's doing stuff like that. So let's separate the characters, make them different, you know, give them different personalities. And because I had worked on each of these different four or five characters, like intending for to make different adventures with them, they all sort of developed their own quirky personalities. And then what I found was when I put them all together in a group, and you do this in your head. I mean, anybody that's developed anything that's character-based, you always have the voices in your head, you know, people that write novels, people that, you know, work animation, people that do comic books and stuff. You're working it in your head. And so when I put the characters together in a group in my head, they started immediately started arguing with one another. And I said, well, you know, that's great, because conflict is, you know, it's a big part of what makes a story interesting. So we have these four or five very disparate personalities, and then to put them together and to try to make them work on something collectively, like repelling a malevolent alien invasion, gets interesting, you know. And that's so I started developing that. Founded Pet Piranha in 2011. And then, like I said, it still went through rounds and rounds and rounds of development. And I mean, I had scripts out for evaluation and taking notes and incorporating notes, and then how many pages is going to be. It just took a while. And then, you know, developed it. And then we ran the first Kickstarter. Oh gosh, 6 years after that. So that was 2017. And then the book actually came out in 2018. So it's a very interesting story around how all that stuff, you know, developed.
Well, you know, I think it's good for people to hear that, because a lot of the times people are making their own comics these days, and I think people go into it sort of blind and don't understand how much effort and work it takes to make something like this take place, especially if you're going to make something that looks good and is an intelligent read and stuff like that. I mean, there was a guy, I one time went to, it was in Miami, near Miami, I went to a convention, there was a gentleman sitting there, and he had handwritten on like white paper some stories and stuff, and he was trying to sell them for a couple of bucks each, and I was like, it doesn't look all that good. I'm really kind of sorry, but I saw him again in Ohio not long after that, and he had basically moved on. He was moving on to something else because he didn't sell many of them. But there's so many people who think that comics are easy stuff. And I think that if people look at Astral in any way with an intelligent eye, they're going to know, this is not simple, easy stuff. This takes a lot of effort. And luckily, you devoted a lot of that effort and that work to make Astral a really strong series.
Yeah, and I would add to that, I think you also have to be, and this is going to sound, I don't know, maybe it sounds bad. I don't know. Maybe to some people it sounds bad, but I think you have to be, you know, kind of good at daydreaming and daydream all the time and be a dreamer. Because that's how a lot of this stuff initially happens is, you know, you can develop with a group, you can have conversation back and forth with people, you can make notes, but a lot of the development just kind of happens in your head. And it happens when you're sitting there and you're trying to do something else. And all of a sudden, you know, your mind goes to this stuff. And same thing, you know, you're having insomnia while you're sleeping. All of a sudden you start thinking about this stuff. And then I you know, one trick I used was I keep a pen and a pad of paper next to my bed where I sleep. And if I think of anything that's really, you know, good, that's worthy of maybe developing, you know, an idea for the series, I'll click on the light real quick and make a little note so I don't forget it by the next morning. So a lot of it comes, you know, when you're not expecting. A lot of it comes when your mind is just kind of wandering. But, you know, don't discount daydreaming because – and, you know, it's so funny because the teachers in school always, you know, they hated that. Well, what are you doing? Where, you know, where's your mind, Jay? You know, what the heck are you doing? What are you thinking about? Where are you? And it's like, well, I was, you know, with my comic book characters. Thank you very much.
There's a guy who wrote a Star Trek book about the autobiography of Benjamin Sisko, and a lot of his ideas came while he's in the shower.
Yeah, I've heard about stuff like that.
Which I found.
Everybody has their little place that they go, and you know, their mind just kind of wanders, yeah. And you come up, and it's great stuff. I mean, you think of great stuff when you're not even trying to think about it.
Well, the good news is the creative process is different for everybody, it seems like to me. And I like it that way. I, you know, however that works best for each person, I'm all for it. I, as long as the good stuff comes out, I don't care if you're standing on your head in the corner, you know, as long as it comes out and it's easy to read and lots of engagement going on, I'm very happy with it. So, you know, whatever works.
Sure. And then, you know, how do you get to the comic book format? You know, I looked at doing, you know, was I going to write prose novels, you know, text novels, or looked into animation. And, you know, the prose, you could, you know, I could write prose, but it's one of those things where I think, you know, with sci-fi and especially with the types of characters that I have, I think visualization is really important. So I think you would lose a lot of that with, you know, if it was done in prose. And then looking at the animation, you know, could have done it on animation. Animation is very popular. It's obviously a visual medium, but it's really expensive, turns out, relative to, you know, books. So it's sort of like comic books are that happy medium that, you know, they're not so expensive. They are expensive to make, but they're not so expensive. Prose is cheap, you know, but then again, it, you know, comic books and graphic novels are much more popular in the circles that we, you know, travel in with the stuff than prose books are. But they're cheap, and they're relatively cheap, and they're visual. But, you know, you can't have a discussion about that without talking about the vices too, which is when you're doing comic books and graphic novels, you have all the problems of a film, right?
Right.
Or animation, you know, and you have all the problems of a book, which is the amount of pages and space you have to put it in, right? And the problem with animation is you have to imagine the shots. I mean, someone's got to think of that stuff, right? I mean, sometimes the artist will, but as a storyteller, I think, you know, sometimes – and that's a good question. You get, you know, off on a little sidebar on that. How do you figure out, you know, which angles to draw and how many panels on the page and how to do the layouts? All that has to be planned. So that's the vice, you know, that's – you're limited by space, you know, like a book, but at the same time you have the problems of a film because you have to set up the shots and get the angles and all that. And how do you do that? Everybody thinks, well, the artist will take care of all that. The artist takes care of the layout. The artist will take care of, you know, the angle, the shots. Is it overhead shot? Is it looking up at the characters? Is it a far shot? Is it close up shot? You know, whatever. And a lot of times I'll let them, I mean, it depends. I usually have notes. I do it by scene. So I'll make notes overall about the scene, and then I'll imagine how many panels it's going to be. And I let my artists have some leeway in like how many panels that we do. You know, I'll suggest a layout in panels unless you've got a better idea, and then they'll do it. But on the other hand, there are some times where I have visualized a particular shot in my head, you know, a camera angle, if you will, to evoke a certain emotion or to recall, you know, something in pop culture, whatever it happens to be. And so in those instances, I will override the artist and say, well, I really have to have it this way. And, you know, they don't mind that as long as, you know, they're able to, you know, have enough creative control on enough pages and panels to satisfy them. When I have to step in and say, no, it has to be this way, they're always very cooperative and willing to work with you on that. So, and have worked with me on that.
Well, you are so doing the paying. You're paying them for that stuff. That kind of helps a little
certainly,
bit there
yeah.
too.
Money talks. Yes.
So I was going to ask, how much do you actually do? Do you have an idea what percentage you let the artist take care of and what percentage you actually want? Because I think about this because my roommate, when he does Stabity Bunny, oftentimes like the artist he's been working with had a little trouble visualizing what he wanted. So he would actually take pictures of himself in the pose that he wanted the character to be in.
I mean, that's one way. I don't usually work that way. What I'll do is my art skills are nowhere near passable. They're nowhere near professional, but I can draw a little bit. It's not good enough, obviously. So I will, if I have a like an idea for a layout of a page, I'll actually take a piece of paper and draw the layout of the panels and then draw, you know, rudimentary characters in the panels, and so I communicate that way. Or like another way is a cheap and quick way. If I got to do it quick, is I'll jump out on the internet and just, you know, rip images down if I can find an image that's close enough. Or yeah, hey, that looks good. I'll bring that down and I'll supply them with that. So either way. But I usually, I'm good enough that I can, you know, it's passable, right? It's not going to win any awards. I certainly don't want it in the book for people to look at, you know, my artwork. But I can do artwork good enough to convey the idea to the artist, and then they can go.
That's good. There. Well, that helps, you know, because I remember one time when Frank Miller had a movie that was made out of a book that he drew. And it just didn't work when they got it onto the screen. It looked like a comic book. Somebody just taking pictures of a comic and put it on a screen, and it just didn't tell the story real well. I think it was The Spirit. I think was the one that he did.
Could be. And then, you know, another one that comes to mind where I think they did do it effectively is Snyder's Watchmen, right? I mean, shots from the movie of Watchmen were lifted right from the comic book. So there's an example where they treated the comic book series, The Watchmen, the 12 issues, as almost like a storyboard, right? For how they wanted to frame the shots on that one, Snyder.
I can understand that. And I like Snyder's stuff. He did that Justice League when he actually went back and shot other sequences to fill out the movie the way he originally intended it. It was like a 4-hour movie, but man, it flew by as far as I was concerned, because I really loved it. I thought I'd like to see him. He had other movies planned, but he never got to do them. And I'd like to see him do those.
Another one that comes to mind too is Bryan Singer used some comic panels and comic covers composed some of the shots in Superman Returns and the X-Men series as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it happens, you know.
Mm-hmm. If it works, all I ask is if it works and makes sense. Now, as we're talking, you're just over halfway to your goal of $4,000. So that's a good place to be. As we said, Monday, November 4 at 10 p.m. We don't want to wait until that date to get things going and make sure that you get there, because we want to make sure we get lots of good things happening and supporting so we get more Astral, because it's got so much fun to read. I really enjoy it. I was thinking the first time I ran into you, I think it was up at, what's the name of that store up in Longwood?
Are you thinking of Acme?
Yeah, Acme. They had a local creators convention, and we were there. Me and my roommate were there, and you were there, and there were some other people I knew too. That was the first time I encountered Astral. I think I bought the first volume there.
I think you did. Yeah,
so I could read it, because I was really intrigued by it and I really liked it. So, you know, which brings to a question: are you doing many conventions these days? You know, now that the pandemic is in the rearview mirror, are you doing many of them?
Lately, I have not, and it's just because I've just been so busy with fulfillment and the Kickstarters. I haven't had the time really. I find it's time consuming to do a lot of conventions. A lot of them are 2-day conventions, Saturday, Sunday, and you got to plan the whole. And you know, you think of other folks that do the conventions, like the artists, you know, those guys that can do it. I mean, obviously I'm not an artist. I'm a producer. I'm a writer. But, you know, when the artists do the conventions, they can sit there and work on whatever issue they're doing, or they can do commissions and make money.
Yep.
Anybody who's coming up to my table, I could write you a poem or something. Nobody wants poems anymore. But, you know, the point is, it's really difficult for me to work there, right? I can't really get work done.
Right.
The ideal situation would be to kind of be paired with an artist, but my artists aren't geographically, you know, located where I am. So it's tough for me to do that. Yeah. So, you know, when I do a convention, especially a 2-day or 3-day, I've got to dedicate the time. And I mean, if people are engaging, it's great. If people aren't engaging, or if, you know, the convention just isn't drawing enough people, I'm not doing a whole lot. You know, my time really isn't that productive. So I'm trying to choose my convention appearances wisely to maximize my time. So I haven't been doing a whole lot lately.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
I've been focusing more on the business and doing the books and getting the books printed, you know, done, fulfilled, printed and out, you know, to people. So, and then of course, spinning up the next one. So not lately, but I haven't, haven't quit 100%, but not as much as I used to. I'll say that much.
Well, I'd rather you were working on the books than sitting at a place not doing anything. So I'm with you on that one. I think that's a good thing. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Kickstarter because it says here now you can build your own Astro book order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that new? True. I don't think I've seen that in your Kickstarters before.
I started that, I think, on the last one. So okay. For issue 3, this is issue 4. So for issue 3, I think I started there. And it's because in the meantime, prior to issue 3, Kickstarter had revamped, I think, the way they did their add-ons and made their add-ons a lot easier to work with. And you can configure them and they even let you do pictures on the add-ons now. Mm-hmm. So that allowed me to do that build your own order. So it's like a buck or something to build your own order. And then it's basically a la carte. So like all the stuff I've got for the campaign is out there as add-ons, plus all the back issues. So you can literally just, you know, pledge the buck and then just go get whatever you want and, you know, add them as add-ons to your pledge and do it that way. So I've had it for the last one, had it for this one, and people like it. I mean, I have a lot of people using that. I've had a lot of success with that. So it's really good. People tend to like, because they can go back and get specific, you know, we do all these variant covers and not everybody is able to get all the variant covers or the ones they want at the time we do the Kickstarter for that particular issue. So like there's some people in issue 4 now that did build your own order and they're picking some back issues for 3, 2, and 1, you know, for Vengeance that they didn't pick up the first time.
Okay. I'm trying to figure why you need the dollar. I mean, don't people just have the add-ons? You can go back to the add-ons and do that.
If you're pledging like any other pledge, yeah, you can add anything that's an add-on to that pledge. But if you don't necessarily want to order the particular like cover A standard issue that's part of the current Kickstarter. And some people don't want that. You know, some people just want the back issues or they don't want the standard cover. They'd rather have other covers of the current issue because they're collectors and you know, we don't even want a copy of cover A or whatever it is. The reason you have to charge the dollar for the pledge is because there's no way to configure it to pledge zero. Right. If I could say right. Pledge zero and then just add everything on, I would. But Kickstarter says, nope, a pledge has to be, if it's individual pledge like this is to basically gateway. It's a gateway. It gets you in the door, basically. Right. And then you get all the add-ons. So if I could make it zero, I would. But Kickstarter does not allow you to configure a zero top level pledge. It has to be at least a dollar. So that's why the minimum amount. And then you just go pick whatever you want.
Now, the other end of the spectrum is intriguing. And unfortunately, as we're talking, I don't see anybody's taking it, but it's the literally everything thing. And that's a pricey one compared to the other ones. $1,699.
Well, that's if you're a high roller, I mean, that's so basically that's all the all the tiered pledges rolled into a single pledge is essentially what that is. So wow. If you want everything we got, you know, you got it. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, you said no one's pledged for it yet. It's possible, you know. The point is, you know, and I say this to the other people out there that are listening to your podcast, you know, your listeners who are running Kickstarters or going to run Kickstarters or configuring Kickstarters, you know, you never know who's out there, right? You might get some high rollers that really like your stuff. And if you don't have it there, they can't pledge it. So
that's right.
It may seem kind of weird. Hey, who's ever going to pick that? Well, you never know. I mean, on my previous campaigns, I've had some high rollers pick some pretty high dollar pledges. And if I didn't have them out there, tiers. Mm-hmm. And if I hadn't configured them, if I hadn't had them out there, you don't make the sale.
That's right.
You gotta have it out there to make the sale.
Now, another one I particularly like is being an associate producer. Your name gets in the credits. And that's a $699 level and stuff like that. So that's a good one. That if I had that much money.
Do I hear you signing up, Wayne?
I wish. If I had that money, I'd be doing it. But unfortunately, right now, that's not happening, unfortunately. But there's a lot of really good stuff.
I meet people at the conventions, and they asked me, hey, how can I get into the business? Hey, you know, can I come onto your team? Can I produce a comic? And, you know, I hadn't even thought about it at that time, you know, at the shows. This was years ago. So just thinking of it, you know, recently on these last few Kickstarters, well, what about those people that wanted to break into the business and be producers? You know, well, why not make a tier for them? You know, so. That's where that came from.
Good stuff. I mean, you know, hey, you know, you never know what people are going to be interested in.
Right.
Do you, I don't think you have one where you can get drawn into the book, do you?
No, we don't have that. I generally haven't offered that because there's a very specific reason why.
Okay.
It's because when you have something like that, there's really kind of two ways that I've seen that you can do it. I've seen it offered as you can be like a background character or whatever, and they charge a lot of money, like $500, $1,000. You can be a background character. I mean, to me, you're not really getting your money's worth. I mean, that's just my opinion, right? I mean, if you want to do it, that's fine. But the way I feel about it, that amount of money, you know, even $250, that's a lot of money to be a background character that's like in one panel. And, you know, you're the only one who's going to see you, maybe your family, people that know you, if they draw your face, you know, accurately. So, I mean, really, well, yeah, I just don't think it's a good value for people, so I don't offer it. And the other way I've seen it done is, oh, you can be a more major character. You could be a character that's in the adventure and then you're killed off or something like that. Well, you know, as we've been talking, my adventures, you know, my, which, you know, my outlines come from that, and then you get the scripts. My scripts are very specific and very targeted, you know, and very precise. And to draw someone in as a major or even like a mid-level character, it's kind of sidetracks the story. There really isn't a good way to do it. I mean, I tried doing it, tried to think about how would we do that, and it just doesn't work, right? I mean, you kind of have to detour the story a little bit. There's really no – because – you know, sure, yeah, you know, it could be a throwaway character that you kill off. And again, I really don't think that's a good value. I don't think characters that I want to have killed off, if I do in my stories, I want to do it my way. I don't want to, and you worry about, are you going to please that person? Is what you're going to do going to please them? Are they going to be upset? You know, I don't want to get into that. So, I mean, I want to have full and total control. And so I just don't want to get into the, you know, well, here's what I want you to do with me as a character in your story, or, you know, or you could just be a minor character, you know, and who's ever going to see that? And it's, don't really feel like it's a good value for what you're pledging. So we just don't do that for the astral stuff.
I did it once. I had $80. The guy was offering 80. You can be drawn in.
Yeah, it's usually a few hundred bucks anyway.
I was shocked. So I thought, oh, man, I got to be in that. Now, it was a story about a Moby Dick as a zombie, a zombie whale. And there was the ship that was chasing him. Needed people to be on the ship, and I was one of those people on the ship.
Now,
the
bad news, character or something.
Yeah, the bad news was because I sent a picture, but see, I wear glasses, and when I looked through the book, I couldn't find myself because I was looking for the glasses. And I said, "Where am I?" And then he pointed me out and said, "You're this one over here." And then, oh, I said, "No glasses." Okay, that's why I couldn't see me. There I am. I recognize me with no glasses. I said, of course, you know, back in the 1800s, glasses was a rare thing to have. So he took them off. And I said, you know, hey, I'm in there. So I was very happy with that.
I think back then they called them spectacles.
Yeah, something like that. He didn't put me in.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like that kind of stuff. I mean, it's almost like you have to, if someone buys their way into your book, it's you kind of feel like you have to have a character, you have to invent a character. Not inventing a character, I mean, it's going to be the person who paid for it, but you're having a character just to have a character or to do it for money. And I mean, I just don't like it. You know, on both sides, I don't like it. I don't like it because then I feel like I don't have total control of what's going on. And then I don't like it for the person who's pledging it because I just don't feel we could do them justice for the amount of money I'd have to charge for something like that. So it's not, you know, I hope nobody feels slighted by that. I mean, I really don't, I'm doing it for the backer's own good, right? I mean, if I did it, you wouldn't like how I'd have to do it. So I'm just not going to do it. You know what I mean?
Well, you know what? Yeah, it is your book, and you have the ultimate say in how all these things turn out. So that's the way it works in the industry. That, you know, the golden rule: he who has the gold makes the rules.
Well, I don't have any gold. I'll tell you that much. Yeah, comic book production, you know, making comic books. Not an industry you want to get into if you want to make a lot of money. Let's say that right now. I mean, sure, there's people out there that do it, but I mean, it's like Stephen King, right? I mean, you're going to go into writing prose books, and everybody wants to be Stephen King. Well, you know, good luck. But tell some great stories, and you know, it's fun for me. I mean, it's like, and you have to do it, right? If you're a creator, you have to do it, because it's like being a. Why does a painter paint? Why does a sculptor sculpt? I mean, you do it because it's part of what you are. And if people are enjoying it, all the better. But you know, to get to that, you know, top, you know, 1% of 1% of the people that are making millions. I mean, hope I get there someday. It's not impossible, but it's definitely tough. And if you don't have the means to. And that's another thing, Wayne, that we really have never talked about on this podcast is, you know, you got to have sufficient funding to have staying power, because, you know, you see the people go into it and they're maybe able to get an issue out. And then maybe a few more years later, maybe there's a number two. And then a few more years later, they're trying to get a number three made. And how many years have gone by now? 6, 7, 8 years. Your audience is kind of, you got to be able to rapid fire them out as much, you know, because otherwise you start leak an audience, you know. So if you don't have the backing, and it doesn't really matter how you get it, whether you're, you know, rich, or you get it through Kickstarter, or, you know, you get it through rich relatives, or you actually get people that are buying into it, you know, you get investors. It doesn't matter how you get the money, but somehow you got to have the money to get the staying power, because you have to be able to do like what I'm doing. You know, you start putting them out and you just don't stop. You know, you don't stop, you never stop. And that seems to me like to be the key of who makes it and who doesn't make it. It's the people that can just keep pumping the stuff out that are going to last. You know, that's the thing, is you kind of got to be able to outlast the competition. A big part of it is being able to outlast the competition, right? So if you can just have staying power and keep pumping out your books, you know, I think eventually you're going to get there, you know. And it's the people that, you know, that put out a couple books and then, you know, they quit, you know, you're never going to go anywhere, right? So it's,
well, you know, a big chunk of it. Ron Randall is somebody that I always hold up as like a success story when it comes to this stuff, because he literally does crowdfunding and he makes so much money in the crowdfunding that he can, you know, he doesn't have to. He can do like two. He earns enough money to maybe do two books or stuff like that, because he's just, he does Trekker.
Yeah, I know Ron. I'm familiar with.
He's very good stuff, and he does great. Yeah, of course he does the whole shebang. He does the art and the, the writing and the whole business.
It's sort of like a John Byrne, you know. He's got a peg on everything. Yeah, it makes it easier. Definitely makes it easier.
He's one of the most successful people I've ever seen doing crowdfunding and stuff like
that. Yeah, I've always pledged his stuff. You know, one of the things he did one time was, I don't know if you saw it, because it's all, he puts it all on the Facebook feeds and everything, but he did a really cool, and I can't remember. I don't think it was a commission. I think he just did it because he knew Astral. So he was reading Astral at the time, and he liked, everybody likes Lila, right? You know, which is really funny. We should go down that road just for a second too, because I was saying before, like the story of Astral is sort of about this core group of human characters. And then so what happened was Lila kind of became the breakout, you know, star that everybody just kind of likes Lila. Focus on that, you know? So Ron, I think, was reading it at the time or had seen it or something. And he drew Lila, you know, in his Trekker art style, and he posted it his Facebook feed. And I was like, whoa, I was surprised. So it probably wasn't a commission then, because I didn't know he did it. But that was cool that he did that, you know. So yeah, he likes Astral too, and I buy his stuff, his Trekker.
Oh, okay.
It's the same thing, Trekker. I mean, and it's what I was saying before. Well, that's what we're talking about. I mean, you got to have that staying power. How long has he been doing it? I mean, I don't know, decades, right? I mean, it goes way back, way to the 90s or something like that. So it's about, just like me, my initial ideas for Astral go back to the 90s. You kind of have to do it, you know, for a long time. And he hasn't, he's earned it. I mean, he went through the tough times when we didn't have this easy platform for pledging and, you know, getting funding and doing distribution, like the crowdfunding sites like Kickstarter and Indiegogo. He was before all that stuff. So, I mean, you know, total respect, right? The only way I've made it through Astral is through those crowdfunders. But I mean, he was doing that stuff even before that. So he's a great guy. And I admire him actually very much.
I've interviewed him and he always talks about the fact that if you're not doing so much social media that you're uncomfortable with it, then you're not doing enough. That's what he
Yeah, for sure.
That's what he said. So he's
got to leverage it. Yeah.
I do want to ask you one question. I think that interests me is covers. Right. How many covers do you have, like a rule of how many covers you want per issue, or is it just kind of do people volunteer? How do you decide to do that?
The answer is yes, or D, all the above. Oh gosh, over the years. So, you know, going back to prior to 2018, because that was before, you know, Astral Genesis was printed. Mm-hmm. So you have to go back a couple of years before that. So probably like to 2015, 2016, when that book was being developed. So I decided, hey, you know, let's do some variant covers. You know, they're popular at the time. So, I think at the time I you know, you have friends like Bill Walco has been a friend mm-hmm. of mine for a long time. And mm-hmm. he did one for that. I forgot how he even got there. I don't know if he was interested or if I suggested or I told him about it, but he ended up doing one. And then the others are straight up hires, like just going back to Genesis. We did a Bill McKay and then, you know, obviously Bill McKay's, you know, popular everywhere now. And of course, you know, he ain't cheap if anyone that's ever done, you know, contracted cover work with him. So, you know, that was more like a job because I didn't really know him personally. So, but yeah, any and all of the above. And how do you do it? Well, again, you got to kind of size it up. So you got to look at for each cover you're doing, how many you're going to print. You try to estimate sales. That's the business side of it. How many copies of this cover do I think, you know, I can sell? What does it look like? I mean, a lot of it's visual. Is it visually enough that I think it will be popular and a lot of people are going to want it? Another one is, you know, are you doing a like an original design or like a cover swipe? So one that's really popular is the Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 129, the first Punisher, you know, swiping mm-hmm. that cover, or mm-hmm. Action Comics number one. Those always seem to sell in good numbers. So mm-hmm. some of it is sales, you know, and then are you doing foil covers? Are you doing regular covers? And then of course it all kind of, another factor in it is the economy too. You have a strong economy, you're going to sell more covers, especially the high end ones. Right. If you're in a tighter economy, which we're in now, you probably are not going to be selling a lot of the higher end covers, and probably not a lot of volume and variant covers. So, you know, lately the last few, Kickstarters, last few issues for Astral, I've sort of been paring the variant covers down a little bit because people don't have as much in their pockets, you know, as they did maybe in prior years.
Right.
So you're looking at how did your sales of previous issue variant covers go? And then you're trying to project, okay, if I sold that many, now I'm doing variant covers for the current one. You know, what would I expect there? Would I expect the volume to go down or up or stay the same, and kind of try to do it that way. So that's how I reason it.
Okay. Well, last question, Galaxy Gal.
Yeah.
Galaxy. How did that do? It was a fun book. I really enjoyed reading it. She wasn't around this time. What's the story with Galaxy Gal? Is she going to come up occasionally? Have you done enough with that, or what's the story?
Well, yeah. So anyway, yeah, that's an interesting, so that's another thing that goes way, way back, you know? So one of the cool things you can do is you can, so it's all about that, like comic within a comic, you know, that's what Galaxy Gal is. Galaxy Gal is literally a comic book within the Astral series of comic books and graphic novels. Mm-hmm. So that goes all the way back to, you know, Astral Genesis. And then even before that, I figured, you know, wouldn't it be cool to have a comic within a comic, but I was like, so what should it be? You know, how do you make it sort of relevant? You know, how do you tie it in and make it interesting? And so, I don't know. I remember when I thought of it, but I thought, well, you know, maybe we have this comic within a comic called Galaxy Gal. And it's sort of at the time I was thinking about it, I wanted it to be like a retro look to it, you know, and maybe the teenage character Rob is into comic books and a lot of comic book readers can relate to that, you know, so it's another thing. It makes the characters more relatable, but at the same time, you know, maybe he has the hots for this character in this comic book named Galaxy Gal, and then sort of, you know, kind of sort of we have that thing happen in the reality of the Astral series, you know, in universe. Now we have Lila, so she's sort of maybe at the time I was thinking she's as close as you can get to the personification, not exactly the same, but a lot of the same, you know, traits. And so Rob has kind of got a crush on her, and so that worked out. Mm-hmm. And then sort of using the Galaxy Gal comic within a comic for humor, you know, throughout the series. And then Vengeance 1, we actually kicked off with a few pages and panels of Galaxy Gal. And prior to that, the artist, you know, who was drawing the Galaxy Gal comic within a comic sort of did it in their own style. It wasn't really the focus. But I decided, you know, I wanted some Galaxy Gal to sort of maybe bookend this Vengeance series. And so stay tuned, you know, to the end. You'll see what's going to happen. But since we're actually going to do pages and panels, you know, a few pages of Galaxy Gal, which we had not really ever done before, I wanted to get an artist, you know, with a slightly different style, you know, to sort of contrast it with the more realistic style. You do a little more, you know, for Astral, you do a little more cartoony for Galaxy Gal. So I think we had like the first five pages of Astral Vengeance 1 was a, you know, little Galaxy Gal adventure. And I'll tell you, there was such a fun and positive reaction to that, that, you know, Bill Walco had done those pages. And so I asked Bill, what do you think about, maybe we just do like a, you know, spin-off Galaxy Gal in her own book. And so that's what we did. So last year we launched a Kickstarter for Galaxy Gal number one. I think you have a copy of that, don't you?
I do.
Okay. Well, there you go. So that's what we did. So Galaxy Gal is kind of its own spin-off series now. So will we see Galaxy Gal within the, you know, in universe and Astral again? Yeah, certainly. I plan to, you know, there's plans to use it here and there where it makes sense. But at the same time, Galaxy Gal has kind of taken on a life of her own and now has her own universe, which is now, you know, obviously contained within, because in the Astral verse, right, somebody in the Astroverse is drawing Galaxy Gal. Maybe it's a Bill Walco character that's in the Astroverse that's drawing Galaxy Gal in that universe. But so the book is alive in its own universe. So now you could go on Kickstarter and you can pledge for these Galaxy Gal issues. And now you can pretend, you know, that you are in the Astroverse because you're reading Galaxy Gal. And that's what the characters in the Astroverse do.
Cool.
That's what they read.
So we're going to see more Galaxy Gal sort of showing up occasionally in Vengeance. Is that what we're going to see?
In a way, yeah, in Vengeance. And then in future Astral Adventures, we'll continue to use Galaxy Gal. And at the same time, I've been talking with Bill. We're just talking at this point, but there are plans. Galaxy Gal number one, issue number one, did well enough. People are excited about it that we want to I want to do a number two. Talking to Bill about doing a number two. I think he wants to do it. It's a matter of, you know, getting on his schedule. He's really busy. He's doing a lot of stuff. But if our schedules can align sometime in the hopefully not too distant future, hopefully in the near future, if our schedules come together, we will definitely get a Galaxy Gal issue two out there for everyone. So that's coming. You've heard it. You've heard it right here.
All right. That's
on
great.
Wayne's World Podcast.
Yeah. That's really good. So let's one more time say this project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Monday, November the 4th at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The goal is $4,000, and it's certainly within reach. So I'm looking forward to Astral Vengeance issues number 1 to 4, sci-fi action horror thriller, is the way it's described on Kickstarter. So all I can say, Jay, is you're doing wonderful stuff as always, and it's always great to talk with you. And I highly encourage people, get out there and support this so we can have more Astral in the future and more things for you to do, Jay.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, and I want to thank your listeners. If you stayed with us this long, thank you so much. Wayne, it's always great to be in the podcast. I always feel like I'm on the Tonight Show or something like that. It's always a really good feeling. But speaking of Galaxy Gal, what I'll do is I don't think I actually have those out there as add-ons. I will add the Galaxy Gal number one issue as add-ons to the campaign this coming week or this weekend. So they'll be out there too. So if anybody wants to check out Galaxy Gal, you can add an issue, the first issue of Galaxy Gal, onto your pledge. For Astral Vengeance 4. How about
very
that?
Cool. Very there cool.
Okay.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time when we'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.